You're listening to Michelle Redfern and Mel Butcher on Lead to Soar, bringing you the best leadership advice and mentorship from around the world. Learn more at leadtosoar.com.
Welcome, listeners. I'm Mel Butcher, and I'm joined today by Erica Jefferson and Michelle Redfern. Hello, ladies.
Hello. So glad to see you all.
Hello.
Me too.
All right. I am bringing a topic to the two of you. And honestly, we've done no prep here. So we're going to talk about something and I'm going to start throwing some different little factoids your way. All right.
Oh, because freestyling is out of my comfort zone.
Not.
All right. I want to talk about performance reviews today. And I want to talk about this because it's a very important part of the employee experience. And here's a couple little bits for it. So there is a Gallup study that states only 1 in 5 employees see their employer's review process as motivating. So we might surmise from that that 4 out of 5 see it as demotivating, perhaps. Even a post on the SHRM website states dissatisfaction with performance appraisals is pervasive. They are seen as time-consuming, demotivating, inaccurate, biased, and unfair. So we know there's issues with performance reviews. Let's start there. There's problems with performance reviews, but we keep doing them.
I was actually reading an article this morning about McKinsey and the culture at McKinsey and their performance management framework, which is, well, some would call it brutal. And I think that word was actually used in the particular article. So their performance management framework is up or out within 2.5 years. So you either get a promotion within 2.5 years or you are then put on performance management. And typically, if someone's put on performance management, they are out within 9 to 12 months. And the other thing that they said is that McKinsey, like a lot of the other consulting firms, I mean, there's a whole lot that goes with consulting firms. I don't think they should be the benchmark in any way, shape or form for workplaces. But one of the things that they were saying, which I kind of pulled out, was people get regular feedback. They get it at the end of a project from the project team members, not necessarily their line manager. They get in the moment feedback, yada, 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 as well as their performance review at the end of it. But I guess what I paid attention to was how I felt as I was reading it and how I felt when I saw the words performance management process or the performance review. And I felt a bit sick and I felt a bit gross because having been in the corporate world for a long time, decades, and particularly as a team leader, as a leader of people, I neither enjoyed doing the industry that was performance feedback because it was an industry, particularly in big organizations, and it was draining and demotivating for me as a team leader. And often I had to force people into a curve. So, Michelle, you've got one person who can be a high performer, 3 people who can be mid, and you will have one person who's a low, and you have to force the curve because that's the way we budgeted for it. So again, I know I always pull back and say, what's the system? The system is set up to force a curve, force some outcomes and create an industry out of that outcomes to fit a budget, quite frankly, rather than say, how might we engage the greatness in every single human in this organization and help them unlock their full potential?
My thing is, and McKinsey is a former client of ours, but I also know very well who they are. And so when I see them put this annual study out, there's one for women. I think there's one for Black women. I said, why are you doing this? Like, you're not real. I mean, like you just said, up or out. So why would we listen to you? We know you have a skewed sense of how the workforce is. But now we've got the rats guarding the cheese. Same people who enforce or encourage this behavior, because they're also teaching their clients this stuff, right? It's not just internal to companies like McKinsey.
And it's them, and it's BCG, and it's, you know, PwC, all of them.
All of them, all of them. So now you're the ones that are going to be writing annual reports for God knows how much on the challenges. You caused some of them. So I can't listen to you as a viable source of information. So that's one thing. And then probably even more important, what is the purpose of the annual review? Is it to, A, get behaviors, attitudes, actions corrected, perfected? Because you could do that as soon as that happens. You don't have to work for a year. Is it a way to do force ranking a la Jack Welch? See how that went. Is it a way to manage budgets? We just have to be consistent on the stories. And that's part of my issue in all of the things in corporate. You say one thing, but you really mean something different, right? So you give this perception that, oh, it's good, it's beneficial, it's going to help you. But then I know you're also going to use that to harm me if you want me gone, if you want to get rid of me. So I'm just like, this whole concept of annual reviews, when the company, are you doing an annual review? Are the employees doing an annual review, or the CEO? Can we do one on the CEO?
Well, that's a good point. Does the CEO sit down with the board and have a review? I guess they do. It's called the annual general report meeting and the annual report, but.
No, employees, because if I'm a
shareholder. Oh, employees. Yeah.
I'm a shareholder, do I get to see and say how you did this year? No, I do not. And until you have unbiased, unprejudiced, unfolks giving these to their staff, I don't want any parts of it, because I know a talented, wonderful, amazing person can get crossways with the wrong boss and you go from silver to shit, haven't done anything different. So this whole concept, especially as an engineer, because I believe in logic, in numbers, and this whole concept follows neither one of them. So I now have employees, and I think about that. If they do something wrong, I'm going to tell them right then and there. And at the end of the year, I'm going to think back on all the things they did, and I'm going to reward them based on their performance. That's it. Why are we making all of this so hard?
I also think, Erica, when you get to that point, none of your employees are going to have any surprises about the good or the bad or the in-between. And I find, and having experienced a fairly major surprise in one of my end of year reviews as an executive, I have talked about this before, it was just dreadful. And, you know, and I might have made a career limiting move by ending the performance review half an hour early and walking out on it. But I said to this particular manager who brought up a matter about my behaviour, it was when I was called abrasive. And I said, well, number one, if I was a man, I don't think you would have called me abrasive. You would have called me assertive. And number two, I'd like examples of when that happened. And it was 6, 7, 8 months ago by someone way, way, way off in the organisation. I said, dude, management 101, you don't smack the puppy 9 or 10 months after it's weed on the carpet. And you shouldn't smack it anyway. But you don't chastise. You're actually in the moment feedback. So I guess, Mel, the whole premise of the performance review, Erica's hit the nail on the head there, the annual performance review, why do we have it? And, you know, this, as much as Simon Sinek is overquoted by lots of people, but start with why. Why do we have it?
Yeah, I want to point to some of the research here that corroborates what we're talking about as far as bias. So there was a 2022 study of nearly 30,000 workers in a retail chain, and they found that women were more likely to receive higher overall ratings than men, but women were ranked lower on potential. This overlaps with some other research that we've talked about where women, they can receive, quote, good reviews in their feedback, but they get almost nothing that is concrete and critical to improve their performance. And say it another way, women are not getting the critical information they need to better contribute to your organization's bottom line and strategic goals. So there's these underlying issues in how people are graded and the subsequent feedback that they're getting. So let's keep going on the thread. What's the purpose of a review? And I think we have to look at it from both sides. What's the purpose for the company? And what's the purpose from the employee's perspective?
I will say from the company's perspective, multiple business functions play a role in that, right? So your department needs to manage its budget. So if revenues are down, costs are up. Okay, that's a sure way for them to start looking at who they can cut and keep those costs down. So directly, your first line manager, that's that. Maybe as a strategic vision, maybe there are some other reasons for corporations to want to keep tabs or keep, maybe from a legal perspective. If we ever want to get rid of somebody, we need to have evidence that they were low performers. We've gotten that in the annual review. We can say every year they were a mid performer. Now we're justified in getting rid of them. So there's not one sincere reason for the annual reviews, because I believe one of the best years I ever had, both me personally and working with the manager, was when I wrote everything down every week in a notebook. And then the next week I wrote everything else down. And by the end of the month, I had everything I had done. And then by the quarter, I took all those months and added them. So you see what I'm doing. If there's some things that need to be adjusted or changed or corrected, you've seen that every week because I've documented. Now, I'm not saying everybody's going to want to do that or managers don't want to see all that, but if we're really trying to ensure that people are doing the work that they're paid to do, that's all that matters. None of this, because this forced ranking, okay, so now you've demotivated the people in the middle because they're afraid they're going to be the next one that are going to be the ones pushed out. Then the ones at the top were like, oh, I'm really good. My shit doesn't stink. I'm going to take this show someplace else. So it's all a house of cards. None of it is for the actual intent of what it should be for, but it's like drug addicts. They can't stop. They can't like back away and say, let's try something different. There's just so, all these functions are so tied into why we do annual reviews that you'll never get them, not traditional companies, to stop.
There's two examples, real life examples, that I want to give. And interestingly, one of them is one of my former employers, the National Australia Bank. They are trialing, or they have brought in monthly performance reviews. Now, I would say for people leaders, you should be having a one-on-one with your people every month anyway, in a big organization. How are you going? What are the barriers? What have you been successful at? And then, as I understand it, there's now some kind of, you know, tracking system where they both enter in. Here are the wins for the month. Here are the challenges. Here's kind of where we landed. Then at the end of the year, I imagine that's added up and some kind of jiggery pokery is done to it, and you end up with a performance rating, which I think is a lot more sensible, and it makes the monthly one-on-one career conversation, performance conversation, a lot more meaningful than the shuffling around, how's your day, how's your week been, blah, blah, blah. So I think that's number one in big corporations. So if you want to do a system, I think it needs to be regular and teach people leaders to have a regular cadence around checking in with their people every month at a minimum. So that's number one. But number two example is a small firm. It's actually where my wife is the CFO. They don't do anything. They don't do anything. And they're a high-performing organization. They're very, very profitable. People get feedback in the moment generally, but I can certainly speak for Rhonda's team. They know where they stand. She does not do formal one-on-ones every month, but she has her arms wrapped around her team of finance and admin people and accountants and what have you. They know exactly what their priorities are. They know exactly when they've done well. And, you know, yes, listeners, I am biased. She is my wife and she is amazing. But she is a great people manager and she delivers the outcomes for the organization. And the owners of the company just go, good-o. They have no interest in creating an industry around HR practices like this. One size doesn't fit all. But there's two examples of perhaps that's a different way of looking at this.
Well, I think the tag on there is that for larger organizations, this is a very expensive exercise to go through.
It's an industry.
Yeah. Okay, so give me some thoughts on 180s and 360s.
Hugely, hugely beneficial, done right, communicated well, and the done right, the implementation. You know, I always say to people, I've seen beautiful strategies on a page, I've seen lovely documents and what have you. I've seen less beautiful implementations. There's a transformation going to go on in the organization. Awesome. It looks really good. The business case stacks up. Implementation, not so good. So everything's in those processes being communicated well. This is the why. Why are we asking you to do a 180? So I do 180s. For the women that go through my Advancing Women program. Why do I do that? Because I want them to become aware about how they are perceived as leaders by the people that matter. The people that matter are the people making decisions about your pay, your promotions, your bonuses, your assignments, your work. So your manager, your two-up manager and their peers, they are the ones, your stakeholders who are making those decisions. You must know how they perceive you. So I think they're very, very useful. But guess what? I communicate it well. I communicate it well to all parties who are going as part of the process. I debrief it well. This is how you read your report. And this is what you do with it. So I think done well, they can be very, very useful, but they're not the be-all and end-all.
I think in a high-performing organization, as Michelle said, it's a tool and one that ensures people know where they stand, where their shortcomings, what their areas of improvement can be. But how many organizations are really high performing? Very few. And I said, you know, this is part of the problem with most organizations, government, academia. They want to do everything themselves. Now, a school, what is a college for? It's for educating. What is a hospital for? It's for curing the sick. So now you've got folks who are not actually trained in this area, but are trying to do the cooking themselves. They're trying to do it themselves, and they're not qualified, and they're not trained to do it. If you've got someone who, oh, I don't like Michelle, so I'm going to give her a bad review, that goes in the file, true or not. There needs to be an external party that can look at, like, well, why did you say that? Because things are being written down as gospel or with some kind of extraneous information that has no bearing on the issues at hand. And I say things like that when it comes, there's a whole function called industrial psychologists. Why don't these companies hire, you spend money on everything else. Why don't you hire an entity to not just manage it, run it, but be able to go through it and say, you know, Mel, is that what you meant? Did you really mean to give Michelle a low grade? I mean, because all the rest of her things, let's get into that. You just can't trust people who have their own biases, their own hurts, their own shortcomings to be responsible for the careers of other people. They're going to mess it up. They're going to harm people's careers. And nothing happens. That's the worst thing about it. Nothing ever happens to them.
We say it here as it impacts their career, but it impacts their whole life. It impacts their livelihood. I want to quote Liz Ryan here. She's the founder and CEO of Human Workplace. And she said, performance reviews are pointless and everyone knows it. Managers hate them. Employees hate them. So why does such an expensive and meaningless process still exist? Performance reviews still exist because they are one of the pillars of fear-based management. Once a year, performance reviews remind employees that they have a boss and that that boss controls their income.
Two things. If you take that whole process away, what is HR going to do with the rest of their time if they're not managing that process? That leaves a lot of time. I mean, you can't do EOC reports all day. So that's number one. It's baked into what they do. So they're never going to say, yeah, let's get rid of it because it justifies their existence. Second, to your point about your whole life, you've taken a solid performer because they did one thing wrong or one thing you didn't like, and now you've demotivated them. And listen, that's just the decent people. For the others, sabotage, I bet you if someone did a study, somebody needs to do a study on corporate sabotage.
There'll be a correlation.
And see the timing of when that occurs. Is it right after those annual reviews? Like, be real. I had one of the worst of my life. I always prided myself on not just being on time, but I would be like 30 minutes early. If I was late, somebody go check on me. Something's happened. And one Sunday, I had chest pains. I'm like 30 something years old. I had chest pains and it freaked me out. And I was like, I don't want to sit here and die. So I went to the hospital. I was in such pain. They had to give me an IV drip painkiller. They had done the EKG and all of this stuff. And they're like, we don't see anything. So we're just going to release you. So, okay, long as it's been checked out, I just don't want to go to sleep and not wake up. So the next day I had a trip out of town. So I made that trip. And when I tell you my colleague had to carry my bag, I was so sick. I was like, I feel terrible. This pain is back. So I made an executive decision not to go on the next day's trip. And I told my manager, I said, I was in a hospital. Do you know he put that I didn't go on that trip? in my annual review. I refused to sign it. I said, I'm not signing this. I said, luckily he got 30-year-old Erica, not 55-year-old Erica. Because I would have been like, you know what? I think we should schedule a meeting, not with HR, because I've learned this. HR can keep or destroy files at their discretion. Let's have a talk. I've scheduled a meeting with the EEOC officer, and they would like to talk to you because they can't touch those files, right? You submit something for EEOC complaint, that's going to stay not just in the company's file, but your name, because if anyone else has an issue, they're going to say, oh, you got two reports about you, Bob. So, like I said, I was done. I was like, I'm out of here. I've done nothing but give 120%, if that's even possible. And I was sick. I had a hangover. I was sick. I was in the hospital with chest pains. And that's what you put in my file? None of the other stuff you put that. I'm done. I've checked out. I'm not doing anything else. And so I think that's what you're doing to folks.
So there's two pieces there that I want to pull out. And this is the actionable things. Number one, we need to train managers how to be people leaders from the very first moment they start supervising people. I've had a couple of conversations this week with client organizations about, please stop just giving training to executives. Sure, they need it too. And particularly in my world, DEI training. I want those managers to be taught how to be people leaders from the moment they're given people leading responsibility. And there are some nuts and bolts about how to schedule, blah, 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 blah. So we must train those managers. So that would be number one, because Bob, in your case, has probably never been told this is the way to bring out the best in people. This is the way to engage the greatness in others. This is the way to help these people, this person, and our organization reach its full potential. So let's teach them. That's number one, because they haven't been taught. They've learned from the guy before who's learned from the guy before who's learned from the guy before who's learned from the guy who was supervising people on a widget line just post the Industrial Revolution. So we've had a command and control, and this is, keep them mean, keep them keen kind of attitude that has been passed down from manager to manager to manager over decades. So that's number one, we've got to train.
I think even building on that is there are some people who are not qualified as people leaders. Once you determine that, so that's part of, as a leader, you're not just managed or reviewed or on your financial performance of your unit. It should be on what your folks think of you.
Well, this is the point of a 360, right? This is one of the reasons why.
But to keep a destruct, because I've seen it, the brilliant jerks, right? You keep
the brilliant jerk. Yep.
You keep them because they're profitable, because they make you money. Meanwhile, their teams are miserable. Okay. Then all of a sudden, when the lawsuits start showing up, then, and as I tell people, that's what HR really is supposed to be for, is to hide all the documents when they get sued.
Yeah, you're right. The brilliant jerk, and we've got to manage them. And this is where we do leadership properly. We define what it means to be a people leader around here. And we've got quantitative and qualitative checkpoints around that. And qualitative is, do my people respect me, blah, blah, blah. We've got frameworks around that. But the other thing, if we didn't do annual performance reviews and that industry around it, you quite rightly said, Erica, well, what will HR do? They'll do what we're asking them to do. They'll innovate. They'll start saying, how do we add value? How do we take this organization, help take the organization from good to great? So we will start analyzing really interesting data, like potentially 180s and 360s, and say, how can we create really positive interventions to, number one, where we've got great people leaders, that we showcase them, that we pull out a formula, that we teach people this is the way it's done, and they become mentors. But we also have positive interventions to coach up and coming people leaders who might, we all have those moments where we go, oh, that was a bad day. And I probably wasn't at my best for my people today. So we're able to coach, but they are able to innovate. So we lose some of this industry, this blindly following processes that we've followed for decades to innovate. That's what they can do with all that extra time.
After you've gotten rid of the troublemakers, one bad seed, that could ruin a whole function, department, group.
That's an important call to executives.
don't tolerate the brilliant jerks, but release HR. Well, no, let's take a step back. Why? So executives and board members listening to this podcast, I'd really like you to put this on your agenda for your next meeting. Why do we do an annual performance review process in our organization? What does it cost us versus what the benefit is? Have that discussion, please.
All right. I've got a couple of things to wrap us up here. There's this idea about, I'm going to give you an analog here. So this idea that if you're a marketer, or I'm a professional marketer and I'm out there in the world and I need a job, there's different places I could get a job. And even though I have the skills, just because they're hiring, I don't need to go to work for a cigarette company. Because even if I'm not the one sticking the cigarette in a kid's mouth, I'm enabling that to happen. I'm contributing to part of that process. And what I'm getting at is that we have a choice. And HR folks have power, they have influence, and they have a choice about where they work and the type of organization that they help to cultivate. Executive leaders, and especially HR executives, you have responsibility here in how these things unfold and the experience that employees have. So wrapping us here, I want to go back to just a few of the things we talked about. So number one, practice dealing with problems as they arise. Definitely shouldn't be held until the annual performance review. Managers need to be practicing giving feedback regularly, monthly or more. 180s and 360s are good tools when they're done well. And managers, most people, when they're moving into a people management type of function, they're going to need some training. And one of the places that they need training is how to give effective, critical feedback. Any final thoughts here?
And unbiased. Now, every human is fundamentally biased. We all are. But we must train people leaders. We must train them in 21st century DEI skills. They are, and I know I bang on about this. Clearly, I bring my own bias to this. Diversity, equity, and inclusion skills are no longer nice to have for managers. They are a must have for the 21st century leader and organization. So that must be built into the training.
Beautifully said.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Michelle. And thank you, Erica. That's a wrap for this episode. Thanks, listeners, for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, Mel. Thanks, Erica.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Lead to Soar. We sincerely appreciate your honest, positive reviews. You can leave questions at leadtosoar.com for Michelle and Mel to answer on future episodes. Until next time, we hope you'll use what you've learned here and lead to soar.